Welcome to the Water Podcast. Water is a family of libraries for testing web applications. You can find more about it at water.com. This is the Water Podcast, episode number 58, recorded on August 27th, 2016. My name is David McNulla, and I'm a software tester in Southern California. Today I'm talking with Woody Sewell, who is also in Southern California. Woody, what do you do?
Well, let's see. Currently, I'm sort of a coach and sort of a guide for people who are wanting to improve their software development environment and maybe their practices and techniques. And that's mostly what I've been doing about the last year and a half.
Yeah, and you've attended a meeting with a team that I was on one time and helped us some. And one of the things I appreciate about that I've seen you do is that you put a lot of emphasis on finding what the weaknesses are and how does the team resolve those weaknesses.
Well, that's a really good point. I think that my point of view is a little bit more that we look at the things that are going well for us and learn to emphasize those, although still being aware of what isn't working well and what we can do to make improvements is really important to me.
Yes. So one of the things that you've discovered on the team that you've worked with for the past few years is mob programming. Could you give a small primer on what mob programming is?
Sure. So the basic idea is that if we work well as a team, we can get a lot done. You know, this is just kind of maybe a part of human nature or whatever it is we are. However, in some endeavors, and software development is one of them, understanding what it means to work as a team has, I think, been limited. So with mob programming, we expand this idea of teamwork to being we're going to actually work together at the same time on the same thing in the same place and at the same computer. So the basic concepts are just very rudimentary. They are like teamwork and getting good at teamwork. But the specifics in software development is sort of how the heck are we going to do that when we usually just sit alone and work and gather together occasionally to get ourselves aligned. So that's mob programming. Let's all work together at the same time on the same thing. And that can be done remotely. I want to mention that. For quite a while, I never mentioned that. And I think people got the wrong idea that you actually have to be sitting together in the same physical space. But you can have a space that's created remotely as well, just like we're remotely being doing this interview right now.
That's good. So what were some of the things that got you started on this discovery?
Yeah, so that's a fundamental part of why this is even good and why it might be good is how did we discover it? And I can kind of give the short version of it. We had been working together to learn some things over about a six-month period. I had taken a position at a place where there were a lot of improvements that needed to be made. And my approach to that lately or in the last 10 years has been more and more to just let's focus on what do we think will help things be better and do a lot of experiments towards that. And we had been doing a weekly study session where we would do a coding dojo, which of a specific type, which is a sort of deliberate practice, where the whole team sits together at a single monitor, usually a very large, either a big monitor or a projector screen, and works on a single, relatively simple problem that has the purpose of helping us learn some specific things, like how to make cleaner code, how to put a particular kind of technique to use, and things like that. One day it came along that we needed to work on a project that had been a lot of problem for a couple contractors, and the team was taking over this project. And we decided to meet together in a regular old meeting where we would take a look at it, decide what the areas of concern were, decide who would do what, and then split up and go do those things and then meet together in another week. But during that meeting, somebody noticed some problems in the code of the sort we had been studying about. And when they noticed them, they said, oh, we know how to fix that thing. And somebody else said, well, let's just go ahead and fix it. And as we started to fix it, we naturally fell into using this Coding Dojo model, which the premise of the Coding Dojo model is this. If somebody has an idea, to get it into the computer, it has to go through someone else's hands. And this requires that we learn to communicate our ideas well, that we learn to question each other well, and accept the responses from each other well. And so that means we're learning to be good team players. And as we did this work on this particular project, it went so well over the next hour or so that when we had to give up the meeting room because somebody was coming in to use it after us, rather than just going back to our cubicles and working alone, somebody on the team said, well, why don't we just go find another room? And we did that, and we rushed over to that other room. And as soon as we got to that other room, somebody said, let's just go ahead and book rooms for the rest of the day. And this was a real eye-opener for me. We had been studying how to turn up the good, how to notice the good things and amplify them. And this was a live example of that in real time. We didn't just say, well, let's look at this in a few weeks and decide whether this was any good. We noticed right then and there it was good. And we immediately turned it up by doing more of it. And from that day forward, it's been almost exactly 5 years, because I think it was in September 5 years ago, and now it's August. Anyways, we've continued doing it. We did not stop after that day. We went from room to room for a few days and started looking for a permanent place to work, found a little workroom we could take over, and then eventually it's expanded now at that same company to about seven teams. It's a company of 2,500 people or so, whose main thing is manufacturing, but their software development has grown quite a bit over this period.
Yeah, don't they all?
Yeah, so, sometimes they do.
Yeah. So I think that brings up some things that are of interest to me and to the audience. This is a podcast about a test automation library. So when you guys work as a team, how do you focus on including testing?
Well, the very first and most important thing that we were trying to learn when I first came onto the company, one of the things that I put so much faith in myself over a number of years now, was to do test-driven development. So that was just something we were naturally learning to do. And in so doing, we started focusing on testing itself. So when I showed up there, the model at the time was that people would basically follow the old time standard of you work on your stuff, you make it work the best you can, you do whatever testing you yourself do, usually some kind of manual testing for each bit you work on, and then it goes to a QA person or team, and once you're essentially done with it. Depending on the exact size of the project, it was usually done at the end of the project. And mm-hmm. So the focus was changing now. If we're going to work as a team, and this was before we discovered the mob programming, if we were going to work as a team, we wanted to have our testing more in more real time. And that's why I like unit testing so much. As a matter of fact, I would take that a big step further and say I really won't work anymore at all without test-driven development, without having the tests in place that verify for myself that I'm not messing up stuff that I've already written and that I'm doing the things that I need to be doing to get the code to the quality level that I want it to be. But the next thing from that is you still need to get some kind of end-user testing or exploratory testing as well done in a regular basis. So we were finding ways to do this in small bits with each added feature or even each added part of a feature. When you're doing mob programming, if we take that along into the mob programming, we very quickly focused on, well, how are we going to do our unit tests? How much of this can we automate? And with some of the frameworks we were working with, you could actually generate tests that would prove that your code is working if you're using certain models. We were using like a model view controller system or framework that a lot of the code could be generated from metadata, and therefore the test could be generated from metadata. Not that that's necessarily a great model or whatever, but it's a good starting point for us. But as the team evolved slightly over the next few months as we were developing this, we realized it was really important to have a tester on the team. And we had started that way, and we realized how valuable that was to have that point of view on the team. So we were automating as many tests as we could, and we were manually testing the things we couldn't automate. And at that time, I believe we started exploring things like Selenium and other tools that are available. And it's become quite a bit more sophisticated there now. But I left that company about a year and a half ago to go out and share these ideas about mob programming. I visit back occasionally, and I think I've got a lot of catching up to do on that.
All right, that's good. Yeah, those are some of the topics that I wanted to ask you about. So I know you've been on the Cucumber podcast. I heard that recently. Were you able to incorporate any behavior-driven development?
Yeah, so a good chunk of the unit testing that we were doing also included BDD, behavior-driven development. We were in a .NET environment, so we're using SpecFlow. And I've seen both Cucumber and SpecFlow and others since then. There's a lot of other things that are very similar that you can use a similar sort of approach. So we actually used it there. And I think that as we go on, as I go on to other companies, I've seen so many different approaches. I believe we need to have all levels. You know, we need it at the unit or micro level. We need it at what we are now calling unit test levels, can include some people will include integration level testing. So we need it there. And then that brings it up into the behavior driven development area or acceptance test driven. Yeah, I see that as being necessary because we cannot in any way do enough manual testing as our project grows to keep up with how many possible things we could be breaking. So we need to find a way to automate as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
We can't automate everything, but we can put a lot of good thinking into how could something be proven to be correct in an automated way, and there's no reason not to be doing that.
So when you guys are doing behavior-driven development, would the team work together to try to figure out what the scenarios were and then maybe run them, see them fail, and then build the infrastructure behind that?
Yes, that's exactly how we would work. So the team would do those things together. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So a big part of working as a team with software development is that we get the best of each team member at the exact point where we can apply it most valuably.
Mm-hmm.
So that means if a tester is not sitting and working with the team throughout the day, we're going to miss that testing point of view. Now, of course, the rest of the team will become better and better at testing and thinking as a tester, but we still want to have somebody whose main focus is understanding, you know, how can we prove this would do what we want it to do? So like there's three like mindsets at least on any team, whether you work together constantly or not. And one's going to be the viewpoint of the product owner, who should be part of the team as well. The product owner has got this vision for what this project or this product should be like. And the developers or the people actually writing code, they have an understanding of the specifics of how certain things get done. But the tester brings the viewpoint of how does this really work? And that's a different viewpoint than the other two. So understanding that and having that available to the rest of the team to be able to ask questions and input at any moment during the development process makes the tester a vital part of any team. And if we separate that out and say, okay, the tester is going to work before we do anything to make some scenarios we need to follow as we code the thing, and then afterwards to verify that those things and other things are working properly, they're being missed from the team during the process of actually doing the work. We can all do that, all three of those things together. Mm-hmm. And when we do that all together, we actually get a much stronger workforce than we do when we're working separately. Because that was a big problem with the pre-agile thinking, that we can separate work into phases. And that's basically what we're doing, whether it's at a micro level or a macro level, I guess, when we say the tester is going to work separately and then give us something that we will use to do our work. We can be part of developing that with the tester.
And thus the term baby waterfalls.
I guess baby waterfalls. Mm-hmm. And so that's just as bad. That's like they used to have this thing they called the spiral model. And that's essentially, in a way, what the spiral model was, although I don't think it was applied this way. But the idea of doing, you know, development of requirements at the detailed level in smaller chunks, and then taking it through development and testing, and then going on to the next part and the next part. That's sort of the idea. They came out with the term iterative incremental development or something like that, and that sort of speaks to that. We're going to do it in phases or, well, in increments that contain a bunch of phases.
Mm-hmm. So I heard you mention about exploratory testing, which personally I believe can involve using some automation in doing so. But I wanted to ask you how your team went about using exploratory testing as a mob.
So what we needed to have as we worked as a team is a way to get from the beginning of a project to the end of a beginning of something we're working on to the end of something we're working on in a very short time frame. So if we take the force of the whole team on that item, then we can get done really quickly, which means when we get done with any specific part, we do some exploratory testing right then just to discover, well, what happens if we do stuff that nobody was thinking about? Can we accidentally follow scenarios, automatically? That's not something we were really ready to just start doing. In other words, just what would a user do? We don't know. And often the developer focuses on what you might consider the happy path or the likely bad paths through the code or through the use of the code. But that doesn't take into account ideas that we just don't think up. So to me, in a way, that's what exploratory testing brings to us. But I should be asking you, how do you define exploratory testing?
I define exploratory testing as testing for which you didn't have a map of where you were going before you started. You create a map as you go along. And as you discover, you identify those things and sort of create your own map and then figure out where you're going next. So for testing, that means I'll have some idea of something I want to try, and I'll try that thing, and things I learned from what I tried will be a foundation for other things that I want to try.
Yeah, so that's excellent. So that's really speaking to this, right? So if the whole team is sitting there going, you know what, we didn't think about this, let's go down that path. Until you have something in front of you to act as the world that you can explore, it's really hard to do that exploration, to think ahead of time, what might the path through this be? And a good example of that is a very simple example would be if you click on something in this dropdown and it's supposed to populate another dropdown, what are the things we could do that might happen accidentally to a user? They might accidentally be holding down a key on their keyboard they don't realize they're holding down because their hand's just resting there when they click on something and things like that. It's really hard to know all the possible combinations that somebody might do, especially not ahead of time. But when the thing's in front of us that we can actually exercise on it, then it's a lot easier to just try things and see what the result would be. Mm-hmm. I can think of this like playing a musical instrument when I was a kid. I would accidentally make a sound I wasn't intending to make and go, that was cool. And how did I do that? You know, and then I can come back to it and say that sparks my thinking about a possibility that I couldn't have thought of if I tried to do that thing on purpose. So as a team, we can do this. Sometimes what we would do would be everybody would open up their laptop or whatever and hammer away at something for a while, sharing with each other where we were going and what we were seeing. Mm-hmm. Another approach to this would have been just to have somebody at the keyboard being navigated by the rest of the team and trying different things. The rule that we followed in Coding Dojos is still here. If we have the idea and we're going to work as a team, we want to express it out loud and allow somebody else to do the keyboard parts of it. So that allows us to all be part of that exploration. That is, if I have a small idea, and you hear it, you may hear it correctly or hear it not as I intended, and it will spark an idea in your mind either way. Mm-hmm. And when you give that idea back to me, it will be slightly changed, and that could spark an idea in my head, and that goes back and forth amongst 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 people. And sometimes the product owner will say, well, wait, that's not how this would work. And that will spark something in our mind to, oh, well, then how can we break that? And so on. So I would say that basically doing exploratory testing as a team is a worthwhile exercise, even if you only do it a little bit every now and then, just to see what it does for you.
Yeah, that's a good point. One other type of testing that I've seen become more prevalent through the years is A/B testing. And I think it takes a lot of anticipation. It really requires proper monitoring. So let me explain what I mean by A/B testing. So yes. In case anyone in the audience wasn't sure, that means to release something into production or a sandbox where some of the users will get one version of the code, other users will get other versions of the code. And so if we do that and we see a difference in behavior or a difference in results between the two groups, then we can discover that there might be a problem that we hadn't anticipated. So the requirement is to have the proper monitoring to make sure that you're discovering what you wanted to find out about the changes in the code. So have you ever seen anything like that done through the team?
So we didn't focus on doing A/B testing with a lot of the work that we had while I was there. Some of the things they're working on now, I think they are taking advantage of that. I've used that on my own on other projects, so I can't really speak to it there, and I don't have any trouble. I don't know why I haven't said where that was yet, but it was Hunter Industries in San Marcos, California. I usually say it right off the bat, but it's not relevant. The work that we were doing while I was there was mostly internal work. There was some external work that the end users would be not within the company. But most of it was for stuff that was used by people in the company. So our path was very rapid. We could try all kinds of things and try other things, and we didn't do it as A/B testing. We would just get something in front of the user and say, did you like that? Do you want to change it? And we would just steer in the direction they want to go or remove the thing or whatever. But I really love the idea of A/B testing, which, you know, from my childhood, many, many years ago, long before the internet, I'd done some mail order marketing. And that's, you know, that's a standard in that world. I don't know if you're aware of how that used to work, but you would often see the same ad essentially in two different places in a magazine or whatever, but with certain little tweaks to it. And I'm sure they were just doing A/B testing. It was written about extensively back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a lot of experience with that. But as far as A/B, from a marketing point of view, I see this being a highly valuable thing. So other than that, you mean to say being used to test usability and things like that? Is that part of what you mean? Or
yes, and to test usability or performance or other things like that. But I was thinking in terms of a group thinking about that at the same time, and thinking about what should go into the types of monitors, I would think a group would be stronger about that than an individual.
Well, yeah. So I think that there are a lot of models of thinking, and that we could say in general terms that when we work as a team, we can get certain benefits, and when we work alone, we can get some other benefits. So there's no reason to think that once we start working as a team, that we need to work as a team all the time, regardless of what it is. So this gets taken a little bit out of the thinking of specifically of A/B testing. But, you know, the advantages that we bring to it as a team are really important. And part of it is how quickly ideas can grow in a more dynamic way if we can have really rapid feedback with them. On the other hand, there's times we need to let things incubate for a while. So we can talk about something and then move off to something else while we're all handling that in our own internal ways for an hour, a day, a week, a month, or whatever. So when we come back to that topic again, we've all had time to allow it to incubate for us. So the idea can grow. And then when we bring it back together, we can do the same experience all over again, where we start sharing what we've learned and then watching it multiply. A real good example of that for me goes back from reading a couple biographies of Einstein. You know, at first, a lot of people think that somebody like Einstein was a brilliant thinker, and they worked basically solo. But most of these great thinkers had at least some, if not a large element, of meeting with other people to talk about their ideas, and also communicating through mail back in those days with others in long letters, covering the points that they're trying to explore. Mm-hmm. So it's this idea that we can get a larger brain or a larger thinking unit than a single individual. And there's no reason we shouldn't be exploring ways to do that, regardless of the type of work we're doing. You know, I think it's really powerful for the A/B testing, as well as almost anything else we might do in software development.
I agree. So before we close up, do you want to make any plugs for things that you're working on? I believe you're going to some conferences coming up.
Yeah. So when is this going to be broadcast would be a good relevant question here.
I think in probably a week and a half.
Okay. So at that time, I will be in Europe, and I am going to be speaking at the Agile Prague conference. I think they've already sold out, so I'm not sure that there's going to be much. But if you happen to be in Prague and you're nearby, who knows, maybe somebody bails on the conference. I will be doing a workshop in Göteborg, Gothenburg, Sweden. And I'm trying to learn to pronounce names of cities in the country's languages, but I'm not getting very good at it. Anyways, that I think is September 16th. And I can get you a link to that if you have a show notes or something.
Yes.
And I will also be – so I've got plans of several things coming up. I'll be speaking at Agile Singapore in October, and Agile – I'm pretty sure I'll be in Australia for the WOW conferences in December. Haven't worked out the details of that yet. So there's a couple things coming up. Additionally, I hope to have some public workshops maybe in the Richmond area in October, Richmond, Virginia, and maybe in Washington, D.C. in November. And there's a lot of other things coming up. I do want to mention something else. I wrote a book with my co-author, Kevin Meadows, called Mob Programming, A Whole Team Approach, that's available through LeanPub. So it's electronic form only right now. We're hoping to bring it to a print form sooner or later. And it could be of interest to some of the people listening to this. LeanPub makes it possible for authors to write a book. As it's being written, people can be reading it. So it's sort of a lean approach to writing a book. And we're pretty much done. I have a couple chapters I want to finish up. One I'm writing right now with Kevin is on doing mob programming remotely, doing it where people are all sitting in different parts of the world. Mm-hmm. But working as a team at the same time. And other than that, I'm loving doing workshops. If your company, any company out there wants to do learn more about mob programming, we can talk. And I just finished up a workshop at Intuit, which does the Quicken products. And I've held them at places like Capital One and Ericsson and Zipcar and many others. And I love doing them, and I'd love to do one for your company. So just let me know if you'd like to pursue that, anybody out there. And other than that, gosh, it's been wonderful visiting with you. And I really have enjoyed sharing mob programming.
I'm the one who's honored. I appreciate you coming on. And this, I feel pretty lucky to have been able to interview you and in a past episode to interview Llewellyn Falco. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I should have mentioned Llewellyn anyways, right? Llewellyn was foundational, or one of the early experts in the things that I wanted to be expert at, and I learned a great deal from him, including the pairing style that they now call strong pairing that mob programming as we do it was based. And also that he introduced me to the coding dojo model that he had learned from those folks in Paris who had put this together in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Llewellyn's been a real inspiration to me in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So my site is dmcnulla.wordpress.com and my Twitter account is at dmcnulla. And your website is?
Well, I got a couple, but I think the easiest thing right now would just be go to mobprogramming.org.
Okay.
And sooner or later you can track me down.
And your Twitter
I do have
account?
Another website, but it's harder for me to give the URL for it. But
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, and my Twitter account is just Woody Zuhl, so you can find me easy enough. If you search on mob programming or no estimates, you're bound to find me quickly. But if you just put in my name, you'll find me immediately. And I'm always looking for people, new people to interact with. I love learning about other people's experiences and gives me new ideas on things to try. So get in touch.
Thank you so much for participating. And I believe you provided a lot of good information for people here. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Water Podcast. You can leave a comment at soundcloud.com/waterpodcast. You can donate to the Water Project at water.com. This podcast is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License. All links will be in the episode show notes. Music for the Water Podcast is by Lee Rosevere, entitled Puzzle Pieces, released February 2016 under the label Happy Puppy Records. Glad you're interested in the Water Podcast. We are looking for a sponsor to help offset our modest expenses of running the Water Podcast. If you're interested, please contact me at the.water.podcast@gmail.com. That's the.water.podcast@gmail.com to discuss how we might help each other.